A few days back, I was contemplating a list of spring chores to get done in the coming weeks. Though perhaps chores isn't exactly the right word, because some of the things I need to do I actually want to do, while others are very much chore-ish in nature and are being done because they need to be done, not because I'll derive any real pleasure from getting them done. Some of them, such as getting my snow machines properly put away, and no, I haven't done that yet, and I have my reasons, are a bit larger in scale. Some, such as putting in more grass seed, will make my wife happy. Some I've put off for a while and really need to make a priority this spring, such as hitting my shop's exterior walls with another coat of stain. Many of them are preparation items for later events, such as getting tools and gear organized to work on my cabin this summer. One small chore that I've largely ignored in recent years, well, maybe this year I finally make good on following through with it. I need to sit down and organize my tackle box. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. I should perhaps clarify that just a bit. Actually, what I need to do is transfer my various lures and such from my old tackle box to a new one I bought last spring and failed to use. Also, the reason it didn't get done is that over the course of my adult life, I fished less and less each year, for whatever reason. There was a time when I much preferred fishing over anything else that I could do outdoors. With each passing year, my desire to fish seems to ebb a bit more, and my desire to hunt increases. Having a clean and ready-to-go tackle box just hasn't seemed as important in recent years. I have dedicated space on this program in the past to topics related to fishing tackle, such as the history of fly fishing or how certain types of gear, the fishing reel comes to mind, came about. I don't think I've ever really said anything about tackle boxes, which are certainly an important item for modern anglers. Let's face it, we use a lot of fishing gear, particularly lures and things that are associated with lures. All that gear has to get stored someplace, and that someplace is normally a tackle box of some type. Today, let's consider what we know of the history of this essential piece of equipment, as well as options that exist for today's anglers. As far as history goes, who knows how long tackle boxes have been around? Some of history's inventions have been so important to the entire human race that we know the progression of events that led to what we have today. Also, some inventions happened in fairly short order, and it's easy to point to a single individual or a short period in history to be able to see exactly when something came about or how. But many items that make our lives easier today came about as a slow series of improvements over an existing idea, and it's a little harder, in some cases impossible, to say when something was first created or who was responsible. Such is likely the case with the tackle box. It's probable that early on, however far back that might be, anglers probably just kept their tackle in whatever receptacle was available and large enough. During the Victorian era, which is to say a good deal of the 1800s, there was in places a thriving side trade for local carpenters and tanners to make small boxes for affluent anglers to keep their gear in. Those who were not so affluent often made their own, folks back then being a lot handier when it came to creating things than a lot of folks today. As angling moved into the 20th century, leather or wood and wood tackle boxes began to give way to metal tackle boxes. This helped to bring prices down. Wood and leather boxes were more like small works of art and had a price tag to support that. Something else that changed as the 1800s gave way to the 1900s is tackle box size. Early on, very few items were needed, so tackle boxes were smaller. As angling gained in popularity as a sport that anyone could do, more tackle became available, and so too did larger boxes to contain all that tackle. Companies that produced metal boxes often did so to satisfy two markets: people who used tools and people who went fishing. There was little distinction between tool boxes and tackle boxes for much of the early part of the 1900s. The box was the same. The only thing that differed is how they were used by the consumer. The 1930s saw the first plastic tackle boxes, though early ones were often small and for the fly fishing crowd. It wasn't until after World War II that plastic tackle boxes really began to take off. And that pretty much gets us to where we're at today. Far and away, the majority of tackle boxes today are plastic. A lot of companies make plastic tackle boxes, but perhaps none is more well-known than those made by Plano. This isn't a plug for the company, though they do make good products, but rather a specific piece of history I came across. Plano began making tackle boxes in 1952. At the time, the company was making largely post-war household plastic items, like vacuum cleaner attachments. Warren Hennings, then the company founder and owner, was an avid fisherman who liked to fish in Florida during the winter months. He owned metal tackle boxes and was never satisfied with them. They got too hot in the Florida sun and would rust in the rain. He decided he could build a better mousetrap, so to speak, and set out to make a plastic tackle box that would stand up to the rain and the sun. And thus did the Plano plastic tackle box come about. In addition to giving Mr. Hennings a tackle box he was happy with, it also gave his company a winning ticket. Today, his company still makes other plastic items, but tackle box production accounts for about 75% of the company's total sales. Initially, sales were slow to take off. Folks were skeptical about whether a plastic box was strong enough, but that skepticism didn't last long. People were soon buying them in large numbers as they realized they were strong enough, in addition to not rusting and also being lighter than metal. My first memories of a tackle box are of a two-tone green hip roof tackle box that my grandpa had. To me, that box was like a pirate's treasure chest, filled with all sorts of goodies to include lures, other tackle essentials, extra reels, knives, pliers, and other items to make any angling outing a success. I have fond memory of that box, but I'd never own one like it today. It was just too big and bulky for how I like to fish. Today, as with so many aspects to an outdoor lifestyle, we have more varied choices than we know what to do with. Tackle boxes and organization systems come in every size, shape, and configuration, and to fit every budget, too. One popular method today for the storage and transportation of fishing tackle are soft-sided cases that have smaller plastic cases within them. This allows the angler to customize the smaller boxes so everything is kept organized according to its purpose. I get how that could appeal to someone, but I guess I'm more traditional. I like my tackle boxes to be hard-sided and a one-piece deal, with everything a part of the whole. Frankly, some of those old Planos, the smaller ones anyway, are right up my alley. I mentioned earlier that what I need to do is more of a transfer than actual cleaning with regards to my own lures and tackle. Over a year ago, I bought that brand new two-sided Plano satchel-style tackle box. It's not too large and just about right for what I do. It's to replace a similar Flambeau model that I've had for longer than I can recall. The Flambeau box has lids that are starting to warp and it has cracks letting in water. Never a good deal. It has served me well, and I'm sure I've gotten my $15 worth out of it about 1,000 times over. So a transfer is in order ahead of another summer and the promise of fishing it brings. That said, organizing tackle boxes is a task many continue to face each spring. Frankly, it's easy, over the course of a fishing season, to wind up with a tackle box that looked like it had its own personal little hurricane roll through inside. Anyone who owns a tackle box knows what I'm talking about. The late Patrick McManus, who was our topic 2 weeks ago, had a paragraph about this very thing in a story called Temporary Measures, found in his book Never Sniff a Gift Fish. Actually, he talks about tackle boxes a great deal in many of his stories. But the one paragraph from this particular story always seems to come to mind for me when I consider messy tackle boxes and what to do about them. The story of which it's a part is about how so often outdoors men and women will solve issues with temporary measures rather than taking the time to pursue a permanent solution. Allow me to share that paragraph. I really do want to organize my tackle box. Several years ago, I fished with the man who actually had his tackle box organized. He expressed disapproval of my technique of hauling out a cluster of lures and spinning it around until I found the spoon I wanted. Naturally, I was embarrassed, and I realized I had to do something to correct the situation. For a temporary measure, I didn't go fishing with that man anymore. Spring is here, folks, even if Mother Nature does continue to spit a bit of snow at us. My guess is I'm not alone in having an item on my spring to-do list that addresses fishing tackle. Now might be a dandy time to get out your own box and have it organized and ready to go, or maybe to look into a replacement before summer gets here full on. I will say this, if you wind up fishing with me, I will not express disapproval if you have to spin around a cluster looking for the right Vibrax or Pixie Spoon. I might just be doing the same thing myself. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.